You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tonight we're bringing you a special show. It's the first of a new series we're calling the Fireside Chats. Now, the purpose of the Fireside Chats is to get into subjects in a little more depth than we're normally able to do. And I'm kicking off tonight with a show based on questions around censorship and the type of material that is typically censored, or at least has been in this country. And we're trying to understand why it was censored and what is the modus operandi of those who choose to censor certain things. And I've actually been looking at a couple of... last week I watched a couple of banned films. One of them was quite famous film by Italian director Pasolini. And this film was based on the writings of the Marquis de Sade. And it depicts quite graphic violence, brutality, and torture. Yet, by comparison to a lot of films that are actually available at the cinema, it's actually incredibly muted and sort of and stylized and mannered. And you know, there's very little actual graphic violence in it. And so, in order to understand this more, I've brought onto the show a colleague by the name of Lawrence McDonald, a man who's done a fair bit of study in philosophy, and he's actually looked at the writings of the Marquis de Sade, who's been quite influential in philosophy. And Lawrence is joining us tonight to discuss the questions of censorship, de Sade and Pasolini. Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Herwood, and nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you aboard the Ship of Truth as we plow through the seas of confusion.
Exactly.
In our journey, to where we don't quite know where we're headed, but all we know is we have to keep forging through the fog and the ice. Now, Lawrence, you've done a little bit of research into the works of the Marquis de Sade, and you know, for our listeners who may be a little confused as to why, you know, why are we talking about this? Well, you know, this question of censorship really is important. And as we are, you know, about to have an internet censorship system foisted upon us, I think it's really important to understand how the existing censorship system works and why it works in the way it does. And, you know, why do you think they chose to ban this particular film by Pasolini? Let's just start with that.
Well, it's a good question. I can only imagine that, you know, when you hear of that film being banned repeatedly in Australia, that it's being done for the same reasons it was always done, which is probably a mixture of, you know, old-fashioned prudishness, defensiveness about art. Because it was made, Pasolini, you know, is a sort of a poster boy of the radical arts, as well as being a homosexual communist, and so all of those things would, you know, probably make him prime candidate for being censored by the Australian censors. If you look at the pattern, you know, we seem to have a pattern for censoring things after other countries have allowed them. So you know, just seen culturally. Would look like just a normal example. Like an example of Australian culture, just like the White Australia policy or something like that.
Right, an example of culture, yeah.
I'm just responding there to what, say, a kind of a man in the street or a common sense response to why it was censored, you know, especially since the man in the street these days is probably from born overseas. Then he would see culture, Australian culture, like that anyway. You know, not like someone who wrote the White Australia policy, but someone who managed to get around it. So a lot of the stuff that's banned, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any justification for why it would be banned again. Whereas, as you said, a film like Hostel, which has got the nastiest sort of physical and psychological violence intent in it.
And Hostel is just one of many, I might add.
Exactly.
You know, there are many, many other graphic, violent films, such as Saw.
Well, exactly. I mean, I don't
Texas
even know
Chainsaw
these things.
Massacre. You know, some of them go back decades.
Hundreds of them. Yeah, there's no end to them. I mean, that's the thing. We're not trying to name a film here. We're talking about a lot of films that are just par for the course on TV, etc. I mean, this is an old refrain as far as violence on in the media is concerned. But
and then, of course, we have many television shows, and increasingly since 9/11, television shows which depict torture. We've actually seen that the show 24, which is widely viewed around the world and you know often discussed because it actually quite often the Jack Bauer, this character who's like an anti-terror guy, he tortures people, you know. But he apparently does it in the name of good, you know, in the name of truth.
Exactly.
He's trying to get the bad guys to cough up the information. But, you know, I've never watched the show. I can only imagine what the torture actually involves. But, I mean, you know, I guess there's probably slapping, punching, maybe electrodes. I don't know. You know, I've seen other films that there was quite a big, cinema film recently that featured a lot of torture in it. It was about a man whose daughter gets abducted by some, you know, child abduction ring, and he tries to track them down, and he catches them one by one and starts torturing them. Liam Neeson was the character.
Yes. That's right. No, I heard there's a new one out for teenage girls at the moment. I forget what it's called, but it's got a teenage girl in the protagonist role doing all this kind of stuff.
Ah, yes. I think I might have heard of that one too, yeah. So it's interesting because, you know, there are these two aspects to torture. One of them is this aspect of like, well, torture is an aberrant thing. It's like it's a product of someone with a disorder, you know, like it's a form of illness, a mental illness, which engages, you know, sexual, you know, fantasy involving domination, involving pain, sadism, sadomasochism. And, you know, that is very common in many crimes. It's the central theme of de Sade's work. That's where we get the word sadism actually from, the Marquis de Sade. Then we have the kind of cleaned up, scrubbed up version of torture, which is that it's actually okay to do it in certain circumstances because you do it to get information. And it's always about, you know, defusing a bomb or, you know, stopping the, you know, terrible thing that's about to occur by getting the information from the terrorist. And I'm curious as to this, these two different aspects to this thing we call torture, because in reality, even in the cases where torture has been used supposedly as part of interrogation procedures, such as in Abu Ghraib, what we saw is that it started to merge into, it started to bleed into the sexual psychopathy of torture, whereas maybe it was originally set up in Abu Ghraib just for the purpose of interrogating prisoners, just to get information. But then we've all seen the photographs, and we know that there's more, even more that we haven't seen, and that the people involved were actually really expressing, they were giving vent to just their disturbed mental state.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you set a standard or lower a standard to achieve an end, you know, once you say that end justifies that means, it's never as simple that as that, obviously, is it? Because in order to achieve the end, you have to change, and so the whole game changes, which seems to be, you know, what's happening. When you were talking about the films and stuff at the moment, I seem to remember something like that happening, you know, early 90s or mid 90s. There would seem to be TV, you know, cop shows on that started, which had a lot more dead bodies and the examination of dead bodies, and the forensic science came to the fore, and you'd get a lot more bodies on slabs and being investigated for marks and clues as to the crime. So the forensics seemed to come a lot to the front, and the dead body seemed to be sort of some object that was becoming a lot more interesting to people, or to the media anyway. And then, as you said, then there was the build-up to the invasion of Iraq, where the whole, you know, genesis of the torture justification was made. And as you say, since then, the media has of course, reflected what's going on in the cultural mind and what's afoot, so that, you know, we seem to be getting hardened to the idea of this kind of thing.
But you know what I find intriguing is now, after all of that, after being saturated with all of this imagery of war and torture and in Guantanamo Bay, and you know, the prisoners kept in open cages with the hoods and shackles and all of the things that has trickled through from the news.
Mm.
Now, suddenly, we're being told that we need more censorship, but it's not censorship of all of that type of information, because that information is actually coming to us through all of the kind of official sanctioned channels, including shows like, you know, the TV show I was talking about before and the movies. We're talking about the government saying, well, we need to bring in a censorship regime so that the bad things aren't accessible. But it kind of skirts around this question of that all of the bad things that have already been normalized in television are more or less untouched by any of that. We're just going to take a quick promo break, and then we're going to get back into the whole question of the Marquis de Sade and the philosophy therein. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Thank you.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, Fireside Chat, on questions of censorship, portrayals of violence in the media, and the criteria by which governments determine what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And tonight we've got a special focus on Pasolini film The 120 Days of Sodom, which was banned in Australia for many years. It was made in 1975. It was recently declassified in Australia. Actually, I shouldn't say declassified. That sounds like some secret thing. It's just basically reclassified, I should say. It's moved from being refused classification to being R18, which means that it will be available in video stores. And you know, the film depicts a variety of aberrant behaviour, which is made possible by the fact that the sadistic people in the film have immense amount of power. They're actually fascists in Italy, and they kidnap hapless victims and have their way with them. Now, I wanted to ask Lawrence about the question of the philosophy behind the Desaad's writings and as expressed in the film, because there is a philosophical ideas embodied. And just one I just wanted to suggest is that it's possible to completely separate or abstract morality from any kind of code of ethics that has been inherited or handed down through the generations that we have come to accept as being, you know, this is good, that is evil. It seems that what Desaad was experimenting with in his writings was saying, well, we could just reverse things. We could make, you know, something that you thought was good, bad, something that you thought bad, good, because we could just create a fantasy world in which was real, though, with real people. And if you had the power to do it, you could enact anything you like, and you could redefine what is good and bad. They call this the inversion of morals.
Right. Well, as I one way of understanding where he fit was to remember that, you know, until his time or around or before his time, all morals were received from the church, from religion, and God being the arbiter, of course. So, you know, the evolution of morals since from that time to ours is the story of how God has gone out of the picture and we have come into the picture as people who can be creators and agents of morals. So it's been this picture of how man has had to take responsibility for his own moral judgment and moral actions away from God. So that's been a gradual process. And, you know, I mean, people didn't want not to believe in God. It's just that God didn't come to the party in terms of delivering good for virtuous acts. Because as is often noticed, you know, virtue does not get rewarded. And so people would look in vain as long as they could. So,
and of course, I might add, at the time in which Desaad lived, it was quite common. Public executions were common.
Yes, exactly.
There was a different style of society to what we have now, where the inflicting of pain and punishment was actually something that was actually done as a public spectacle.
Yes.
And I know that Foucault has written about this from a philosophical perspective, to say that that this was actually regarded as something to be enjoyed. That was the popular...
And then people did enjoy it at the time, yes.
And in a way, that was actually the...
Well, they didn't have TV either.
The payment of the penalty, if you committed a crime, particularly an abhorrent extreme crime, part of the payment of the penalty was that you would grant the enjoyment to those who, you know, the spectacle of you being tortured and maybe executed.
Right.
Or perhaps slowly tortured before you're killed. And that actually is actually a form of enjoyment. And therefore you're paying off the debt by giving people, you know, some entertainment.
Yes.
Well, that was actually the thesis of Michel Foucault. Yeah. And I just thought I'd throw that into the mix.
Well, that's right. And we these days have, you know, we're a bit squeamish about making those kind of remarks and seeing those kind of things in, as facts about how people act. You know, these days we don't admit, I think, as much as people were able to, about their own passions, about their own makeup as beings, as animal beings, than in prior times when things were a lot simpler. So, you know, these days we have a problem saying, admitting to even sexual drives and a lot of those sort of repressions. Of course, Freud has, you know, done all his research on. And so we're still dealing with all these kind of issues that come up as a result of God having receded into the background with all of his majestic power to reward good and to punish evil and to be able to make the world right for us, to give us a home to live in morally. So we, in a sense, you know, man is lost still struggling to find what is right and what's wrong. And because in the end, he's the only one who can decide. So we have this battle between the society and the individual in the process of that dynamic being worked out, if you like. I mean, that's one way of looking at it.
But of course, in today's society, we have an ostensible belief that violence is never condoned. That there is no place for violence.
Right.
They banned using the cane in schools. In New Zealand, they passed a law that actually stops parents from actually smacking their children.
Right.
We have various. Progressively, we've removed violence from the criminal code. So we abolished capital punishment in the 1960s. We don't condone violence, and yet we find that our country is engaged in wars.
In wars,
and getting back again to these questions of condoning of torture and random killing or summary execution of people, I guess via predator drone attacks, etc., which they're currently doing in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Now we're sort of rambling a bit here, but I mean the point that I wanted to get back to was the philosophical questions that had been raised by the works of the Marquis de Sade, which are further explored in Pasolini's film, where we see highly respectable members of society, a judge, a bishop, a duke, engaging in acts of utter abomination, in utter depravity, without compassion, enjoying the pain and suffering of these helpless victims.
Yeah.
And this film was banned. This film was banned, and there are prominent members of our government that are not happy with the fact that it's now actually going to be available through the video store. And my secret thesis, my conspiracy thesis, if you like, is that there is this element, this strain that runs through our society, where the very powerful within our society, the power elites, the super elites, are able to engage in wanton acts of depravity. Whether it's through these pedophile rings, kidnapping and trafficking of children, or whether it's through the mechanized systems of war and destruction that we know are actually funded through the most powerful organizations on the planet. You know, I mean, these wars that are taking place at present don't just happen in a vacuum. It takes massive amounts of very carefully organized activity and money to make it actually happen. And there is an element of this same kind of sadistic cruelty for cruelty's sake going on, I believe, in those situations, as well as in the case of just the the more mundane abuse that we see.
Well, there's a lot of points there. I mean, philosophically, to get back to the philosophy, Desaad can be said to have rejected wholly the idea that good exists in any abstract, in any, how should I say, moral way, independent of the working of nature itself. So this was a milestone on the path of the evolution of man away from his belief in God. You know, he was rejecting the idea that there could be a benign influence on the what we see, what we can see for ourselves as how nature works with all of its bestial impulses. And when you're talking about war and the manifestation of these impulses in war, well, it's only too obvious that that's what it is, and that you can see it, and that society works through, you know, its own hierarchies, and yes, that it is a manifestation of exactly the same thing. The elites are very much a part of the society as well. If only because if an elite controls a society, then, you know, neither can exist without the other. So when we have a war and cruelty is, you know, you can see examples. For example, when we saw that a couple of weeks ago of the people being the photographer being shot in on the West Bank
in Baghdad, and yes, you know, the WikiLeaks
that has always been associated with war. You cannot have a job of killing people without those sort of passions somehow, in some circumstances, being let out. You know, in
a way,
war.
I mean, you could argue that in order to have a war, you have to actually encourage those. Right.
Exactly.
Because otherwise...
The dogs of war.
You have to unleash the dogs of war.
Yeah. And dogs, okay, just to take that metaphor, I mean, not that we're getting off the point here, but...
I think it's very much to the point.
Okay, but so a dog or a cat will kill something with what we see, what... You know, if a cat kills a mouse, it toys with it. A dog is not known for toying with it, but it's definitely known for ruthlessness and you know, what it's not sadism, but to a human.
Well, cats are classic predators, whereas dogs are more. I mean, they work in teams.
Well, they work in teams, and an army. So an army has a lot to do. Can be compared with how dogs work because of the pack mentality aspect, and it's this group and pack mentality that is often associated with the worst aspects of these kind of impulses. And again, ironically, Desaad, as I said before, has been called the poster boy of freedom for modern philosophers because of the fact that he doesn't stand, at least because of his speaking out, for the pack mentality. So art has taken him up for his individualistic stance, even though it's an extreme. I mean, Desaad must resist any kind of classification because of his very extremism, or his extreme. I wouldn't want to call him an ism because that would put him into some sort of pack. But anyway, it's well known that, yeah, this kind of the psychology of what we're talking about, where people start behaving like... in a brutal fashion, is often this group mentality, which, you know, art generally tries to be very wary of in any way. When you have an organization, when you get a whole syndrome of psychological behavior that individuals just don't display when they're not in that sort of slightly coercive environment, where for their very validity and their own identity, they start identifying with a set of behaviors that they see around them. One thing that's come out of statistical physics as applied to society in recent years is the fact that, you know, people will behave in a quite predictable way given the right circumstances in crowds, for example. But it also reflects the fact that people are extremely sensitive to their social surroundings. You know, no matter how they come across, and they might be the big strong man or the maverick or whatever, we cannot predict how a person will behave in a crowd or in a, you know, in a crowd psychology situation. That is one thing that has been established. The very frailty of these kind of personal boundaries, which open the floodgates for all the evil in the world.
Excellent, excellent roundup you gave there. Thank you very much, Lawrence. Look, that's about all we've got time for tonight. I hope that you found that interesting. We haven't really had a chance to get very far with it, but we could probably talk for 3 hours and we probably wouldn't get much
further.
Yes,
and we have in the past too, and hopefully we will again, Gerwood.
Yeah, so from Truth News Radio Australia, that's our fireside chat for this week. Thanks and good night.
Good night.